Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Dr. Roy Martina. He's a world-renowned holistic medical doctor specializing in health coaching and personal development, with more than 30 years of experience working with incurable cases and researching the best way to help people cure themselves. He has recently written a book called Emotional Balance, and that is going to be the main subject of our talk with him. So welcome to the program, Dr. Roy.
It's a pleasure to be here, Michael. Thank you for inviting me.
Right. I'm very pleased you sent me the PDF version of your book, which I read today, so that a lot of the details were fresh in my mind. And I must say, it's very informative, and you've clearly done a terrific lot of research to put all that together. And am I correct in thinking it's taken you those 30 years to formulate all the information that's gone into this book?
Yeah, exactly. What happened early in my career, and that's more or less 30 years ago, I started out as an acupuncturist. And since day one, I told all my patients that if within 10 treatments they would not be cured or vastly improved, the rest of the treatments would be for free until I could figure out why they were not improving. So I had a lot of experience with so-called incurable diseases. People have been everywhere. And I had all the time in the world also to do research on them. And step by step, over the years, you know, a lot of the mysteries were unraveled. And also I discovered some new things that I did not, I would say, learn in workshops or from other of my colleagues and so on. And part of that is teaching my clients, my patients, some simple techniques through which they can create a healing state in their body. And that is basically, I would say, the basic concepts of the book, Emotional Balance. So everyone has now a handbook, and step by step they can guide themselves back towards health, vitality, success, and happiness.
Absolutely. I think that's wonderful. If I get your intentions correctly here, obviously the main theme of your book is that most of people's problems relate to some emotional disturbance. Would that be correct?
Yeah, basically what is missing in, I would say, conventional medicine is the energetic concept. So in my concept, and I think that's pretty much accurate for everything, everything begins at the energetic level, and if there's stagnation of energy over time, this will go to a biochemical level, and if that persists for a while, it goes to a cellular level. So by the time someone has a, I would say, measurable disease in the blood, it's biochemistry. If there's cell degeneration, like in cancer or in arthrosis, or inflammation, it's on cellular level. And on energetic level, the biggest impact comes from unresolved emotions or suppressed emotions. So if people learn how to manage the emotions better, then they start getting a grip back, control about their health, vitality. So that's the link between emotions and energy. And that's very, very important for people to understand. It's not so that emotions are bad, but when we don't manage them correctly, they could be the seeds that lead to biochemical disorders and later to cellular changes. And reversing that, it takes more time in general. So if someone has an emotional pattern, an emotional problem, that's easy to correct. If they already have a manifestation on cellular level, that may take a little bit more time to correct, but it is completely possible to reverse, I would say, over 90% of the chronic diseases.
Yes, I would think most people can relate to the idea that emotions can be the root of their problems, because we only have to think of times when perhaps we've been depressed or overstressed or irritated or have some sort of negative emotion, and we know how it pulls us down at that particular time.
Exactly. And at a deeper level, If we take it one step further, because that's where a lot of people lose the link between emotions and their physical disease, when something manifests, let's say like cancer, to take a really heavy subject, once you have cancer, a lot of people may forget that that's the end state of a long process of development. And if they go to a traditional doctor, conventional doctor, they only focus on the cellular level. They're trying to destroy the cancer cells with chemicals or radiation or surgery, but the doctor never looks back. They don't go and search for the beginning at the energetic level. So a lot of that information is lost in traditional medicine. And in some of the holistic medicine, they really can see the links between the disease and the emotional incident and processes that led to this disease. So, a lot of people forget the links, and for that reason, it seems like you have a physical problem and there's no relationship with your emotions. But once you understand the energetic concepts, then you can go back and find the real cause of disease.
Yes. Right. Now, having read through your book, I've marked up about 10 statements that you made, which I thought were very pertinent and very important. And that could be the basis for me talking to you, because I'll tell you some of the things I've noted and I'll get you to tell our listeners a bit about it. Now, the first bit I came to was when you said when we are in still point, we feel inner peace, harmony, and love, and we know that all is good as it is, even if it is not what we want. Now, illuminate our listeners a little bit about what you mean.
All right. I'm happy you start here because this will clarify a lot of the things that we'll be talking about. So basically, when we create the healing state of the body, when all the energy systems are flowing like they should, the body is a complete self-healing machine. So what the listeners need to know is that the basic premise of acupuncture is that the body is primary and electrical system, and this energy, this electricity, is divided through the meridians in, I would say, like the same ratios for everywhere. So if anywhere there's stagnation of this energy, let's say in the liver, then we become more sensitive to the emotions of the liver, which are anger, frustration, resentment, bitterness, and so on. So the still point is where we are detaching from all the emotions. We are now in what you can call the perfect state of mental, emotional, and energy. This is the most perfect state for healing. So when I'm treating a patient and I can bring them to still point, no matter how I bring them to still point, it could be to meditation, it could be to visualization, it could be through acupuncture, to acupressure, even saying, certain mantras could help. When we reach that state of still point, the body automatically goes on self-healing. So basically, all healing really is self-healing. The goal of the practitioner is to create that still point. And when we're in that still point, we're detached from, let's say, or pain and pleasure mechanism. So the body is a dualistic machine which will go away from pain and trying to go to pleasure. So the body then really go in a kind of neutral state and detaches from pain and pleasure. And that's where the healing really happens. And we feel the in that state we feel harmony, we feel at peace. A lot of people also may remember this when they do meditations, when they are maybe watching a beautiful sunset or take a beautiful walk in a park on a beautiful day. These are all states that we all know, but the goal is to be able to access those states at will and for healing. And that's what this book helps people to do, to be able to go to still point quickly at whatever time you choose to.
So what you're really doing through the instructions in the book is providing people with tools for self-healing.
Exactly. You said it perfectly, because it's not about, if we would have a challenge less or what, or we change our thinking and become positive in thinking or saying positive affirmations, because all of those things is not really what promotes self-healing. Because some of the positive affirmation, even the empowering beliefs, can be disease-forming. So if anything we do, positive or negative, that suppresses our emotions will take us away from the still point. So the whole idea, the concept of the book is to give my patients and now also the public a toolbox, techniques that they can bring the body to a still point and this way promote self-healing, because that's what the body does naturally anyway.
Yes. Right, now I'll move on to my second point, in which you said that to achieve the wisdom needed to find unconditional happiness, we need to liberate ourselves from the many limiting beliefs we have grown up with. Now, I'm sure that's a pretty big subject.
Okay, so what's important to know is that the first 7 years of our life, we have a subconscious mind that's completely open. It's like not having a filter, not having a protection against the reality happening outside of us. Around the age of 7, we start developing a critical mind. And this critical mind helps us to filter what is real or not real, to know what, you know, the difference between a fairy tale and what's real or not. So the critical mind becomes more and more active after 7 years. Everything that happened before 7 years of age is registered, is stored in the subconscious mind as a reality. So if a teacher tells you when you're at the age of 6 or 7, whatever, you're not good at math or you have problems reading, whatever you are told becomes your truth, becomes a limiting belief. If your father tells you at some point you're not doing something right, you might believe you're not good enough. And so you create most of your self-image you create before the age of 7. Once a critical mind is developed, everything is sealed into the subconscious mind. If we look at the conscious and subconscious mind in the same way like we look at an iceberg, only 10 to 12% of the iceberg is above water. That's the conscious mind. The water level is the critical mind. And underwater, whatever is submerged underwater, that's a subconscious mind. That's almost 90%. In that 90%, we have our self-image. So if we have limiting beliefs, this will form the quality of our lives. If we believe we're not good enough, we don't deserve to be happy, healthy, or successful, this will become the driving force for the rest of our lives. And yes, we can fight it. But most people fight it through the conscious mind. And that requires a lot of power. So if you go to a motivational seminar, you will be coming home hyped and powerful. But after a while, the subconscious mind takes over and you go back to where you were before. And you're not really changing your subconscious self-image. And that creates also disease later on in life.
Right. Now, in your chapter on killers of men, you were talking about looking at the leading killers in Western society and mentioned that heart disease has been at number one for a long time. You went on to say that the best remedy for the heart is letting go and accepting. Tell us what you mean by that.
All right, so if you go to a conventional doctor with heart disease, they will find at the level of biochemistry and cellular changes that for them will say, you know, it's your cholesterol, it is your high blood pressure, it is this and it is that. But again, medicine there is missing the whole point. They're missing the energetic part. Where does it begin? What is the reason that we will develop later in life arteriosclerosis? What's the reason that we're having hypertension? What's the reason that, you know, we have high fats in the blood? And you may believe it's nutrition, but it's not. Because many people are eating similar diets. Not all of them will have the same kind of biochemical changes. So it is not a factor missing. And when we dig deeper, what we'll discover is that the heart is very sensitive when we hold grudges, when we hold, I would say, traumatic events from the past. We're not resolving them, when there's anger, when we cannot forgive, when we have closed our hearts based on rejection or not feeling love and all of that, and we cannot let go of the past, that changes the energy flow to the heart on the meridian level, and then basically the arteries become more sensitive for outside influences. The other thing is that if we don't accept what is, before we want to change anything in our life, before we want to let go of anything, we first need to accept it as being in our life. So let's say you have a situation, a relationship, where your partner is in a certain way. The goal is not to change the partner. The goal is to accept the partner and to change the beliefs inside of you, the history inside of you, so you can deal with this partner in a way that it no longer stresses you. Once we master the letting go of the desire to change the environment, but we change the internal environment, then we start establishing peace inside. We're starting to feel harmony, and then we can deal better with the outside environment, and then we have the power to change it. If we come from pain, it's much more difficult to change the external part.
Right. Now, you said that the enemy of the heart is suppressed anger, and you also speak in the same chapter about hostility. I imagine everyone has experienced one or both of those particular emotions. So how do you eliminate it, if that's humanly possible, from your sort of psyche?
Yeah, one important, I would say, symptom for people who have suppressed anger is that they will be, in certain situations, sarcastic, cynical, or negative. And also, they may have some problems with certain type of personalities. So if your father was a very strict, dominating figure, and he didn't give you a lot of space to be yourself, you will have problems and resistance with anyone who will have any type of resemblance with, you know, the personality of your father. So you actually, you're looking always in the mirror in any type of relationship, the things that bother you, the things that really frustrate you, the things that, you know, really makes you feel make you feel uncomfortable. And you start noticing that you feel hostile to certain people. And some people may not even do you so much harm or make a big problem, but you just feel something against them. So these are the symptoms of suppressed anger. And also another symptom is that something small happens and, you know, you release all this frustration on this person. So once you recognize these symptoms, we have to start emptying this, I would say, a bucket full of aggression. And we do that by practicing, for example, forgiveness. We start forgiving the people who are, you know, making us angry, making us frustrated. And that's the number one thing that I believe will change that, that we need to learn how to forgive and let go. And I really tell my patients, they have to become master at forgiveness. They have to practice on everyone who does something that makes them suffer, makes them feel rejected, not respected. And as more you practice letting go and forgiveness, you start emptying this bucket of aggression in yourself. And that starts to change, you know, the energy in the heart. It becomes softer, we become more open, and we are less afraid of intimacy, less afraid of any type of opening ourselves to others.
Yes. I suppose this happens often with people when they feel they have been the victim of some type of injustice. So what you're really saying is you've got to let that go.
Absolutely. What I discovered is that we don't even have to have a big trauma in the past to experience that, because everything comes from the interpretation. It could be, you know, we could be 3 months old and already feel anger towards someone who did not react in time or whatever. So what I discovered over and over is that even the little incidents that happen on early in life can be causing our type of reaction later in life. So if we don't know how to deal with it early in life, we will keep on repeating these type of incidents, and they will get bigger or they get worse, or we start reacting worse against any type of injustice. Sometimes it's not even injustice that's done, but that we feel that we were not treated in a right or fair way. Some people are very sensitive to that. They have a lot of red flags very quickly, and that's because they have a pattern of feeling victimized. It's in them. If we don't change that pattern, if we don't change that self-image, we will always stay in that kind of mentality and attitude.
Yes. I guess it must be very hard for people who have either directly or perhaps who are a member of their family experienced some kind of violence, because that really would put people off of the person who perpetrated it.
Absolutely. I mean, violence is something, is a big red flag that would, I mean, it would traumatize any type of person in general. And still, when we have been treating violently at any state or any age in our lives, we can have people react to it in different ways. So one person, let's take a woman who's been raped, I mean, abused physically, you know, and another woman in the same situation. One may never again be able to open herself to any type of relationship. And the other, maybe after a while, heals herself, and she can go on with her life and maybe even change it into something powerful, empowering for her. So that pattern, the which path you choose, an empowering path, or are you choosing to stay like a victim, is determined by the things that happen early in life. So to what I do with my patients is bring them sometimes back to an early event, which is not a big of a trauma, heal it there. And then as they go back to time, returning to now, we can heal all the other things. And in my book, I also describe what you can call the art of forgiveness. How do you learn to forgive? How do you really learn to let go? And we use specific acupressure points for the heart and liver to open the flow of energy while we're forgiving, which makes it more easy. Many people forgive just on a mental level. When we combine it with energy level, when we open up the channels of energy, forgiveness becomes easier and easier. And at some point, it just dissipates. The memory changes. The charge is gone. The facts remain, but there's no emotional charge to it anymore.
Right. Now, something that people might not be readily aware of, which you put in the following words, is that every thought we think and every emotion we feel is communicated to every cell in our bodies. So that my question there is, so what effect does it have on them?
Yeah, that's quite interesting, because I've done quite some studies on the immune system and in relation to the emotions and, you know, the thoughts, and especially because I've been, you know, for 30 years, I've been working with a lot of cancer patients, and, you know, they have a really, really high priority on my list when someone has terminal cancer, because there we have this time problem. So if someone comes to me and they only have 2 months to live, we really, really need to work hard to change that so they would win that battle. And one of the things we need to change is how they relate to their thoughts and emotions. So let's stick to that example just for a moment. When someone is diagnosed with cancer, just the diagnosis in itself creates a second shockwave through the body, because now we're dealing with, you know, the fears that we have about cancer. We are creating images in our mind about cancer that are negative. We're creating negative images about surgery, about chemotherapy, radiation, and all of that weakens the immune system even more and more and more. Then we have also the projection of the fears of the people around us. So let's say our relatives who are afraid of us dying are now projecting fear on us, and we start resonating also with those emotions, and that strengthens our fear anymore, even more, and that paralyzes the immune system. So the biggest job in cancer is to teach people how to change their thoughts, how to deal better with the emotions, because these have a direct effect on the immune cells. So for example, there are cells in the immune system that are called T killer cells. These are the most important defense cells that we have. These are the aggressive cells, like I would say the commando cells, like, the special forces. And these cells respond the best to the frequency of love. So if we can bring ourselves to think about something we love, something we're passionate about, our T killer cells get more active. If we think about someone we love a lot and we tap into that love, those feelings of love, our T killer cells get stronger. So the frequency of love actually makes our immune system more aggressive. If we, research has been done, and what is the problem? Hopelessness is the most important reason that the immune system goes down. So the moment we lose hope, the immune cells also lose their aggressiveness, and cancer now can proliferate and become more and more and more. So in cancer, this has been proven over and over. But the same thing happens for any type of disease in our body. Every cell in our body reacts to our thoughts and our emotions.
Well, that's a very interesting subject, that's certain. And by way of supporting your comments, I notice that you refer to Paul Purcell's book, The Heart's Code, and you actually quoted some of the information relating to memory transplants. So it might be interesting if you just mention one of the cases by way of indicating that the cells do carry memory.
Yeah, exactly. A very interesting case is a brother of mine, my oldest brother. He received a kidney transplant, and his whole personality changes. And based on those changes, I could immediately see that the donor was from a woman, that because his personality changed, he became much more a caring person. He loved cooking much more. He started taking care more of the house. Something changed in him that, I couldn't recognize him before after that, because he was a police officer, a very high-ranked police officer, a leader. And all of a sudden, he became softer and his whole personality changed. So based on that, you could see that his new kidney was bringing also a new energy into his system. And I've seen that over and over in many, many patients who receive donor organs. So based on that, we now know that the organ carries a memory of the person that it's coming from, and this can influence the receptor, the person that is receiving this organ. So it's been quite interesting. So I've been working with some people where we've been integrating this energy to a level where it will not influence them and take them away from who they really are, so they can stay more connected to themselves.
Right. Now, in another part of your book, you talk about things that can trigger off different feelings within us, and you went on to say that triggers that cause unpleasant feelings should always be welcomed, as they are offering us a chance to change and get closer to unconditional happiness. Now, some people might not feel they would necessarily want to welcome unpleasant feelings. So explain a little bit about that.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That it sounds like a paradox. So here's the most important thing for your listener to clearly understand. Anything that provokes a reaction, an emotional reaction, a feeling inside of us that we don't like, that's not pleasant, we are projecting on this person that they caused that. So we will say, you make me angry. But in reality, this person is only reminding us of an unresolved issue that happened in the past. So let's say that at the age of 4, something happens and you really, really got angry, but you didn't resolve it. The anger stayed in you. Any type of similar situation is triggering this old anger. So if you have the techniques like the ones I'm teaching in this book, so anytime you're triggered, you get the chance to heal that problem all the way back in the past. So when the person would repeat the same behavior, the same actions, or you would be in the same situation, you no longer will be triggered. So let me give a very nice example. I divorced from my wife because I couldn't handle it. This was before I knew all these techniques. And
Yes.
then I realized after the divorce that she could still trigger me and other people causing the same type of reaction in me. So I then start visiting my ex-wife more and start working on myself more till I reached the point where it's very rarely that she could trigger any emotion or feeling in me that was unpleasant. And also my life changed because of that, because a lot of other situations that used to trigger me no longer could trigger me. So the whole secret to that, what you just mentioned, has to do if we take that moment of being triggered and we use the techniques that I'm teaching you in the book, you will never again be triggered by a similar situation. And step by step, you're liberating yourself from the past. And for that reason, we should be grateful to the person who triggered us in the first place. So if someone makes you angry and you healed that part in you, they cannot make you angry anymore, but they helped you to create a healing reaction in yourself. So that's what I mean with welcoming the triggers, because these are just the doors to healing ourselves.
Yes. Well, when you explain it that way, of course, one can see that it makes a lot of sense. So, although you don't appreciate it at the time, these people are doing you a favor, really.
Absolutely. In reality, they can be even your master teachers. So in my case, for example, my two sons, oh, they could trigger me so much. So by keep working on myself, they became my master teachers. They taught me patience. They taught me to breathe and stay in my power, and so on and so on. So the people who trigger you the most are the people who can help you heal the most. And that's the system is beautiful once you understand it.
Right. Now, we're getting to a slightly different area here. You were mentioning the well-known therapist, Gay Hendricks, and the fact that he had noticed, I assume it's a he, or she, that any area of pain, blame, or shame in our lives is because we have not loved that part of ourselves enough. Now, how would we firstly, go about that?
Yes, another very famous author and a friend of mine is Debbie Ford. And Debbie Ford talks about the shadow side. She is really, really great in teaching people how to embrace their shadow side. The shadow side we could see as any part of us that has been suppressed at some point. So as a child, we learn to suppress these parts. So for example, when a child doesn't feel well, and someone comes to the house, a visitor, your mother or your parents want you to show them a happy face, and they say, "Come give this person, a hand and be polite." So we're teaching children often to suppress their emotions. So they now start to believe on a subconscious level, that part of them is not okay. So they start suppressing those parts, and these parts become parts of our shadow side. So, and we start then to judge others where we see this type of behavior, those things that we don't accept from ourselves, the things that we have pushed away, we judge in others. So we blame others for that. And we are ashamed of if we do something like that ourselves because we judge ourselves. And this creates a lot of emotional pain in us. And a lot of people suffer just by looking at other people and judging them and not being okay with who they are, instead of, again, using their power of healing, they stay in a constant state of pain and they become like, table tennis ball. They're just being, hit left and right, and there's no way they can defend themselves. And basically, by embracing, our judgment, by embracing our shame and who we blame and accepting that that's part of us that we cannot see or we don't want to see or we suppress, we start to shift it towards healing. Step by step, we become more and more accepting of ourselves and we stop rejecting ourselves. And that's where we go back to healing, harmony, and inner peace.
Yes, indeed. And you do go on to say that to get rid of these feelings is simply by loving yourself for having it and accepting the feelings or thoughts effortlessly, and not, and I think this is important, and not spending energy judging them.
Exactly. And the same thing also goes for negative thoughts. Whenever a negative thought comes up, whenever you have these thoughts that criticizing yourself, telling you're no good or whatever, you don't have the power, one of the things we have to do is we have to detach from those thoughts and return to our power by saying something positive to ourselves. I'm okay. I'm perfect as I am. Even on my bad days, my bad moments, I'm still okay. We need to keep reaffirming that we are okay. We need to keep reaffirming to ourselves that we are lovable, even when we have negative thoughts. Because all these negative thoughts and feelings are echoes of the past. They have nothing to do with us. They're just stored information that comes up through triggers, situations. And if we keep reminding ourselves constantly that we are okay and we can start to love ourselves even though we're not perfect, then the healing begins, and then with the peace begins, and we step by step we return to our true authentic power.
Right. Now, in the chapter about emotional balance points and total health, you talk of engaging in the art of communication with ourselves. To illustrate that, would you like to tell us the story about Jan van den Berg?
Oh, that's a really, really nice story. Yeah, he was, a business friend of mine many years ago. And what really happened is that most people don't know is that they can give commands to the body. They can dialogue with the body. And if I remind the story very well, he was in Paris and he got this fever. He got very, very sick. And the next day he had a very important meeting. And, he was one of my students. And basically what he did was went in a dialogue with his body and telling his body, I need a couple of hours to go into this meeting. Give me this time so I can, have a good meeting, and then I'll go back to bed and finish off whatever you need. And, it was miraculous when he told me the story that, he woke up, the fever was gone, he went into the meeting, and when he got back, he just went back to bed to finish off the healing. I had women who had problems with menstrual cramps. They start dialoguing with their body, and one of the most important things about this dialogue, because in the meantime, we're using, for example, with cancer patients, is for them to learn that the cancer is a messenger. And once you can start a dialogue, you can actually, learn from your cancer. Instead of seeing it as an enemy, it can become a master teacher in your life and start to guide you towards the changes that you need to make. So to have different levels of what you can call talking, body talking, talking with the organs, talking with your disease. And it can be a tremendous instrument to really learn how to manage certain diseases in your life and engage into the healing process.
Right. Now, you talk also of acceptance and love of self, and you said the most important step to creating a new habitual pattern is to respect, accept, and love yourself. Well, we touched on that a little bit before, but this question or answer in loving yourself seems to come up quite often in your book.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You see, a lot of people practice some sort of positive affirmation, and many people talk about, or affirm to themselves, I love myself. We refine that over the time because the consequence of loving yourself is, number one, that you accept yourself. If you love yourself, it has consequences. You have to respect yourself. So we start combining acceptance, the love of self, and respect. And through that affirmation that we're doing in combination with certain specific acupressure points, we now are starting to change the attitude in our lives. So we start to step out of being a victim or feeling, negative all the time because we're not perfect. And we need to learn that we are okay the way we are. So we start respecting and we start focusing on what's okay in our lives, what is good in our life. Everything starts to shift. So if I wake up in the morning and my first thought that I consciously create, I love, respect, and accept myself just the way I am creates a neutral state, creates a kind of a still point. Because wherever I am in life right now, it's okay. If it's not perfect, it's still okay. If I didn't achieve my goals, it's still okay. First, we create a neutral space, the still point. And from that still point, then we start to think about what do we really want? Where do I want to move this energy towards to? What are my goals for today? What do I want to achieve of this day? So we set the attention for intention for today. Another neat technique that I've developed that helps a lot of people is that at the end of the day, before we go to sleep, we evaluate today. We look for the moments that we were triggered, that we were not in our power, that we lost control or we felt emotional. And we kind of visualize those moments again, but now we relive them as in exactly the way we would like to be. And what is happening now, we start to create in our brains a new type of hologram, a holographic image of who we want to be. And that creates, again, new nerve combinations that are called synapses. And if we keep repeating that for 3-4 weeks, we are now more free to make choices in any situation. We can feel the trigger and switch back to our power instead of continuing on a pathway of an emotional reaction. So these techniques combining with I love, respect, and accept myself will drastically change the life of many people.
Right. Now, fear is something that everybody must have experienced at some time. How can we eliminate that, or how can we face a situation without being fearful?
Yes, so what we need to change is basically the meaning of fear. So one of the things that I teach to my patients and to a lot of my clients is that fear is like a messenger telling you that courage is on its way. So for example, a great metaphor is at some point, you know, I've done firewalks, and the whole idea of having people walk on, you know, a bed of hot coals was for them to confront with the fear, to feel the fear. And once they accept the fear, that the fear was there for a good reason, it was not your enemy, it is your friend warning you, hey, you would be crazy to walk on those hot coals. But then you have a choice. You can feel the fear and do it anyway. And then if you just allow the fear to be there, then you can access your courage. I'm a six-degree black belt martial artist, and I've done many, many years of competition. And sometimes I encountered matches with people that I was afraid. I was afraid to fight them. But never, never did I back out of a fight or competition because of fear, because it was okay to feel the fear. It was okay to accept the fear. And once I accept the fear, I could transform it into courage. And I can give myself positive feedback. I can tell myself, this guy is bigger than I am. He's faster than I am. But I will find his weakness no matter what. I will find his weakness and I will win this. No matter how much fear I felt, it never stopped me, you know, to compete. And for that reason, I became 7-year undefeated champion of Europe and also twice world champion. So fear is not your enemy. Fear is your friend, and it's trying to reason with you. You listen to your fear, and then you take a decision. Do I want to feel courage? Then you access your courage. So these techniques really help people a lot, and I've dealt with a lot of people who are afraid of dying, and we work through that, and then they would have feel the courage and accept that death is as much part of life as being born.
What about, say, fear that is really outside of yourself? Say, in the world today, you may be in a country which is facing a likely war and you're fearing the consequences of that. Would you approach it the same way?
Absolutely. You see that once we have fear, if we don't do anything with us, it can paralyze us. If you see fear, even though there might be a reason for that. Let's take another example. If we would go bungee jumping, you know, if you're standing on top of a high elevation, you're looking down, you will feel fair. So are you going to jump or not? That's the decision you have to make. In a war zone, you know, we can use the fear to heighten our senses. We become more alert. Or we use the fear, we get paralyzed, we freeze up, and we, you know, can become a victim. So because fear is nothing else than a kind of an energy in our body. And the question is, how are you going to use this fear? Are you going to use it to paralyze yourself, or are you going to transform that either into courage or to become more acute in your sensory observation? So fear is always useful. It gives you power. Once you understand it, it gives you tremendous power because it charges your body with adrenaline. And this adrenaline you can use to run faster. You can, you know, maybe hit harder, or, you know, you can just do something with it by being quiet. We have three reactions to fear. It's either we fight, we freeze up, or we run away with flight. So those are the three things. And we can choose which one we want to use and how we want to use that.
Right. Now, this is really going to be, I think, possibly the one last main question here, because we're rapidly getting to the point in the program where I want to give you time to talk about your website and the other work you do. So I'll mention that in your book, you do talk of the fact that we are divine beings. You talk of our higher self. You say that God must be all there is, all there ever was, and all that ever will be. So in what sense does our spiritual self fit in with what you're doing?
You know, in my book, I have a very funny chapter, and the chapter is called www.god.com. What if God has a website? You know, how what would you find on this website? It's very, very intriguing, I would say, chapter. The point is, for me, not anymore a discussion, are we divine beings or not? I think we passed that, you know, bridge many, many years ago. The point is, how can we reconnect to the divine essence in us? So my spirituality concept is so simple that many people can relate to that. You know, I tell people there are only two situations in life. Either you're connected to that divine energy inside of you. When you are connected, you experience the qualities of peace, harmony, love, and equanimity. When you're not, you now are in the human experience of chaos, pain and suffering, disease, unhappiness, misery. So the moment we become aware that we're not connected, we need to have the techniques and the tools to go back to being connected. That's basically the concept that, you know, how I explain to people. So we only have two movements, away from our authentic selves, and we move into the chaos, or we move back to the connection. And that connection, again, we can describe that as still point. So when we talk about the healing power of love, we're talking about the connection to the divine energy that we all are. And that's the most powerful healing energy that we have. And the more we succeed to stay connected, the better we will experience the life quality. We will feel much more happier. We will become radiant and vibrant and be able to share this happiness with as many others as we possibly can.
Well, that's wonderfully put. Now, would you like to give our listeners your website address? And I don't know whether you want to include your Facebook one as well. But
absolutely.
Perhaps you'd go ahead and do it then. Fine.
Yeah. I think the easiest for everyone is just to go to www.emotionalbalance.com, because it's the title of the book. And from there, we can link you to all the other places of interest for you. And also, then you get all the information that when the book comes out and you buy the book on Amazon.com, you will be able to get more than 50 bonuses that we're giving. I'm also giving two free classes how to implement the book in your life. So once you buy the book, you can come back and you get all the information on these free classes and all the special bonus gift. I have some special meditations I'm giving away to people by the book. So you will find all the information on the book, also of a free telesummit that I'm doing with 10 other best-selling authors that are giving away bonuses. So the listeners just have to remember emotionalbalance.com, and this will link you to the fan page on Facebook and all the other information that they need. Also to my own personal website, If you want more information about me, you can go there. So just go to emotionalbalance.com. All the information will be there.
Right. Can people buy the book direct from you?
No, we're referring everyone to Amazon.com if they're in the UK. It will also be already available in the UK. And for the people who are, you know, listening overseas, March 15th, the book will become available and they can order to Amazon.com.
Right. Now, do you still have your self-help books available?
Yeah, we actually have a couple of free downloads for people on several books that I've written that I'm giving away for free, you know, on different types of subjects. I have a book even on weight management, a lot of other stuff. Yeah, so we, you know, and that's what I love about the internet. You know, there's so much stuff you can just give away for free and keep people engaged in the process of learning, self-healing, personal development, and spirituality.
Right, that's fine. So the date again from when your book is available, did you say the 15th?
Yeah, the 15th of this month. The book is available on Amazon.com. But people can already go to the website, emotionalbalance.com, and to already inscribe, because they'll also get a free newsletter and they can keep abreast of all the stuff happening, you know, and this way we can stay connected if they like that.
Right. Is that a monthly newsletter or is it just one when you feel
I will come out with a monthly newsletter and it also will be promoted by the Hay House. And that newsletter, we're probably going to start with it April, May. And each month people get a free newsletter, free meditation. It'll be like a one-year kind of guided meditation people get every month they can listen to. And this will lead to regeneration, rejuvenation, healing, and all of that. It's a free service that we're offering to all our readers.
Right. I think that's wonderful. It's been wonderful, again, to speak with you. It's a terrifically interesting subject. And I think we could have had several programs about your book.
Yes, but
that should be enough to whet people's appetites, I think. And I hope you have every success with the launch. So I have to thank you very much for coming onto the program, Dr. Royce. It's been very good indeed.
It's been wonderful, Michael, and thank you a lot for having me. And you never know, we may meet again. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you indeed, yes. Well, I think that was an excellent talk there with Dr. Roy. Next week, my friends, I've got William von Holst coming on, who is going to present the work of Imre Valion, who is the author and spiritual master of a book recently released called Planetary Transformation. And he talks of new explanations about the cosmic forces behind the dramatic events to unfold on planet Earth and its inhabitants up to and beyond 2012. And we all know what an interesting subject 2012 is at the moment. So, again, I think that's going to be a very interesting program. So, again, thank you very much for being with me. And I do hope you can make it next week. Thank you very much. God bless you all.